Pluto.
What's up, Schmodown fans? This is the Schmodown Rundown. I am Frank Janich, and this week, it's just me. It is just me. No Brad, no Steph, no guest. Just me. And first off, let me tell you, it's been a struggle for whatever reason. And this happens from time to time, at least once or twice a year, once or twice a season. You know, it's just really, for whatever reason, things line up that are obstacles to record an episode. There's technical issues, scheduling, what have you. All of that and more happened this past weekend to try and get this episode recorded. No Steph, no Brad, no guests. It was even a struggle just to try and get this part going. I'm still excited to talk about everything that happened on Friday Night Titans. We had the culture, Clee Wiggins and Amaru Moses, going up against the dojo of Mark Riley and Jacoby Bancroft. Super excited to see those two brand new debuting teams. But they were the appetizer to the main event that was Ben Bateman versus Mike Kalinowski, a hotly anticipated matchup. This one has been building for a couple weeks now. And very excited to see this one go down. And it did not disappoint, I'll say that much. There was also some other extracurricular activities going on outside of the matches pertaining to Schmodown setting up, foreshadowing things to come. Matchups for future matches were set. I'll get into that a little bit later, but I do want to start off talking about the dojo and the culture. So the dojo, Mark Riley, Jacoby Bancroft, love it. Love that energy. Love the dynamic that they have, the mentor-mentee type of relationship. And to start off this episode, a little bit after the initial scene, which I'll talk about later, Mark Riley and Jacoby Bancroft, they're going back and forth. You know, Jacoby's like, I want to get back in there. Riley's like, I got the peeps just for you. Every time I'm in the studio, the only people I can find is Winston Marshall and Clee Wiggins. Who does he find around the corner? Winston Marshall, Clee Wiggins, along with Amaru Moses, who's now jumping from Inner Geekdom to Teams Division play, which is very interesting. I'm very excited to see when players go from Inner Geekdom to either singles or teams. So this was a fun little wrinkle thrown in here. And then we have Mark Riley returning in a competitive capacity with Jacoby Bancroft. And this match, I thought was great, and it had a lot of different things going on, particularly when it came to the culture with Clee and Amaru walking out with seemingly Amaru's uncle, I guess. Interesting little wrinkle with that. Interesting character, although it is played by Winston Marshall, just so you know. This is a show. But the uncle character that was the manager for the culture was very entertaining. Very fun. I loved every moment of that. But then the dojo with Mark Riley, a legend of the game. He's really, you know, the last of his kind. Because I just saw it for the third time, that is Top Gun Maverick. Mark Riley kind of reminds me of Maverick in this scene. If you've seen it, this is a spoiler. Well, it's also in the trailer, so not really a spoiler. But Ed Harris' character goes to Tom Cruise or Maverick, and he's like, you guys are a dying breed, and Maverick's like, maybe so, but not today. And that's how I feel about Mark Riley. You know, these OG players from 2014 and even 2015, you know, they're a dying breed, but not today. And Mark Riley showed up in force. You know, he put up 11 points with the bonus in the first round to complement Jacoby Bancroft's 9 points, which is just an incredible debut first round for this team. 20 points right off the bat, that's incredible. And very formidable if they continue on in the future. When you look across the table, look across the stage to the culture, Amaru Moses, he put up, 8 points, I believe, of his own to Clee, who struggled a bit with 4 points. And it's really the back half of that first round that Clee had some struggles and was not able to add additional points to their total to kind of, you know, help bridge that gap. It's an 8-point gap between the dojo and the culture. That's a tough spot to be in. But I do like the way that the culture responded. you know, they went, they ended up landing on Wayne's family, ran the table 5 out of 5 for a full 10 points. That's exactly how you need to respond in the situation that they found themselves in. So I like seeing that fight, that grit from Klee and from Amaru. I thought they worked pretty well in that second round. So that was good to see. But then the dojo, they come back. You know, Mark Riley spins away from that wild card slice. He's like, that's okay. Oh, we landed on Star Trek? Cool, let's do that. They go 4 of 5. I think they had a really good back and forth. You kind of heard them talk about, you know, them working together in that second round, which I think worked out pretty well. Although they did give up a 1-point steal. So what was an 8-point lead going into the second round, exiting that second round into the final round, it dwindled just a bit to a 5-point lead. 28-23, still in favor of the dojo. Great spot for them to be in. The culture, you know, Amaru Moses, he goes for the 2, Klee goes for the 3, and it's that 5-pointer that to me, it was pretty brutal, because I watched Casper a lot growing up, haven't seen it in quite a long time, and if I could, never in a million years tell you, you know, about, what was it, Dan Aykroyd, Clint Eastwood, Rodney Dangerfield, Mel Gibson in Casper. I mean, that's incredible. Like, I never would have got that. It's a tough 5-pointer, I think, in my estimation. They used all the repeats to try and pull it. Just didn't work out. Sometimes that's just how it goes. But, you know, there was, you know, when it pertains to the culture, I think there was some good, some bad, and some things you need to improve on. And that's going to happen with debuting teams. You're not always going to come out the gate, you know, on fire. That just doesn't happen all the time. And sometimes it takes a little bit to get going. But I think there's enough from this performance from both Klee and Amaru that I feel optimistic about them going forward as a team if they get another opportunity at it. Again, got to work in that first round. Not much you can do in terms of, I mean, that's more of an individual play, right? So that's kind of more on Klee to kind of figure out how to stay locked into the game, because I feel like that back half, I think it kind of got in her head a little bit. She got a little sideways there, and that didn't help, obviously. I don't know if it would have turned around the match in their favor, but I think it would have made things a lot more interesting in the final round. And that's really all you can ask for at this stage in the game. You want to always have your opponent trying to answer that 5-pointer. And if they're not even getting to the 3, you know, there's some things you got to work on. And I think Amaru and Klee, I definitely do think that, you know, another match for them would be interesting to watch. And to really gauge just how far I think they could perform. Off the bat, do they look like a title-contending team? No. Not many teams do in their debut. Not many teams. You know, not everyone's going to walk out like Coast to Coast or the Appointment, in my estimation, or the Movement, right? Like, those teams, or even the System, for that matter, you know, those teams jumped out at me as like, oh, I think they could contend for a title, possibly. Or, you know, a little tweak here and there, and I think they could get in the conversation. Sorry to say I didn't feel that way about the culture, but that's not to say that they can't turn it around. So I would, and that's also me saying I want to see them in a second match to see what they can do. Now, when I look at the dojo, I still don't look at them as a title-contending team right now, but I do think they have all the makings for it. I think they're on that cusp. I just need to see them answer a 3 and a 5-pointer. I can make a determination whether or not they're good enough to play for a title, because I do think separately that Riley and Jacoby put together, look at that first round, 20 points, right? That's where you want to be, 11 and 9 points for your, you know, teammates. That's great. The giving up the 1-point steal in that second round, that's going to happen from time to time. And I do like they went 4 out of 5. It's a very narrow category in Star Trek, so it doesn't really give me a whole lot to say, oh, wow, they really, you know, killed that 90s category, or they really, you know, went deep on action adventure. You know, they really showed me something there. Star Trek, very narrow slice. Like the way they work together, that bodes well for the future, for future categories they're going to be, you know, working on in second rounds. But how much can you go off of Star Trek? Great, they know a lot about Star Trek. That's going to help, obviously, and that's going to put something, you know, in the back of their opponent's minds next time, like, hey, stay away from Star Trek, right? So that helps. But they weren't really testing that final round. You know, Riley hits the two. Pretty easy, pretty standard, right? But didn't have to answer a three. Didn't have to answer a five. That's where you really get to feel out what a team's all about. So, no, you know, there's nothing that the dojo could do about that. They did. They answered practically everything that was put in their path, right? Except for one question or two questions, really. Looking at the numbers, they went 25 of 27. Jacoby with that one miss in the first round, and then missing that second round question. After that, it was a brilliant game from them. The culture, on the other hand, 20 out of 29 questions. That's 69% accuracy rate. Nice. Earning 68% of their points. So I thought a lot of potential there for the culture. But, the dojo, I think they have the makings, but I need to see a little bit more. No fault of their own that didn't happen in this match, which is why I'm curious to see them play another one, if they can do it, if they can kind of work that out. Same thing with the culture. I think it might be a little bit tougher just because of the way the team's division is building out. You got to win to keep moving on. And it's always been like that in the showdown. You got to win to keep playing. You hardly get second or third opportunities off of losses in this league. That's the way it's always been. And that's for better or for worse, right? So if we do see the culture again, I'll be excited to see what they can do. If not, that's unfortunately sometimes the way it goes. The dojo, on the other hand, I think they got to get another match. I don't know if it's in time before the tournament or if they get into the tournament. I don't know, but I just know I need to see them at least one more time to see what happens in a second round where it's not such a narrow category and they're tested more in the final round. Because with the pedigree that Riley has behind him and all the experience he has, I want to see some of that, transfer over to Jacoby, because I think he can be really, really great in this league. Doesn't have the wins to back it up right now, but take that away and look at the way he plays. The answers that he's pulling, that gives me a lot of promise for what he could possibly do. Doesn't always pan out. We've seen tons of players come in with a lot of promise and never fully capitalize on what, people may think they're capable of. Again, very excited about these two teams. Very much enjoyed the match. I mean, the uncle bit was just a wrinkle that was very much welcomed. Really kind of changed up the dynamic and the flow of the match in some spots, which I enjoyed thoroughly. That post-match interview, let me tell you, I had really no idea what was going on with the culture. But it was just very fun to be a part of. Very fun to be a part of. The uncle bit again, just I think one of the best things we've had in matches, in my opinion. I very much enjoyed it, but again, I'm looking forward to seeing what these two teams can do. Also, real quick, did I say this up top? I can't remember because I'm just rambling here now. Whenever Mark Riley is in the studio, how come we can only find Klee and Winston? I digress. I just think that's funny. Twice in a row. Well, let me see who's around. First time, Jacoby. Let me see who can find you a match, Jacoby. Klee, Winston. Klee, Jacoby, you guys want to do a match? Cool. Great. Awesome. Jacoby wants another match. Let me see who can find around here. Klee, Winston. Amaru? Okay, cool. Want to do a team match? Awesome. Let's go. Kind of funny. Who are they going to find from Swag next time? I don't know. But that all aside, it's great to see Mark Riley back in the fold, back in a competitive sense. Want to see what he can do with Jacoby. We'll see. But, that was pretty much how the episode kicked off. But what initially kicked everything off was this interesting scene with one Jen Sturger. Someone sent her flowers, which is always nice, right? That's a nice gesture, as long as there's no ulterior motives, which I fear could possibly be what's going on here. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out more next week, because believe me, I am interested. I'm curious what this all means. I saw some comments about possibly, but I feel like he's more direct these days, right? You took a look at his scene with Shannon right before his match with Mike, right? he's more direct these days in that sense, which, you know, I also, really, you know, why this is, I think, I was thinking about why is Ben going to Shannon right before his match with Mike? Wouldn't you try and get under Mike's skin, the person that you're actually playing? But I thought about it some more, and I go, well, I think maybe Ben, this is just fun for him, right? I'm going to torment Mike. I'm going to, you know, try and get under his skin, and I'm going to, you know, try and rattle Shannon's cage. Maybe if she's not completely focused on the match, right? Maybe she misses a challenge or something like that from Mike, or gives bad advice, or isn't on top of her game that day. Some, I don't know, whatever he's thinking. He's a lunatic these days. But it was just like, you know, Ben, go out and play the match. Go out and play the match. And that they did. That they did, and more. Okay? This match has been building for a couple weeks now. Obviously, we saw the contract signing, and again, you know, the Shannon and Ben's, you know, situation right before the match. A lot going on, and Ben, you know, again, going back to having, you know, turning Dan Merle to the dark side with Kate. So he's been doing a lot this season, and, you know, turning his back on Andrew. I mean, it's been a whole thing with this guy, and I just think he doesn't know how to stop. Doesn't know how to stop, and I don't think he wants to stop doing the things that he's doing. But let me tell you, this match, I was very much anticipating this match. Being there that day, watching it all go down, I got to say, a lot of the audience was also very curious about what was about to happen, because you can feel the tension in the room. You know, Mike wants to win badly. He doesn't want to lose to Ben Bateman. No one wants to lose to Ben Bateman, right? And I think it's safe to say no one wanted to see Ben win. Well, maybe Kate and some other Den people, right? But that doesn't count. The audience, I got to tell you, I think it was probably like 90% in favor of Mike. And, well, let me take that back. It wasn't that they were rooting for Mike. It's that they were rooting against Ben. Didn't matter who he was playing. It goes back to, you know, that classic post-match interview with the Patriots and Ken. And he's like, you know, when they were playing Above the Line, he's like, people didn't come here to watch Above the Line win. They came here to watch the Patriots lose. And that's exactly, I think, what was going on with this Ben and Mike match. Mike's a fine singles player, you know, and he's also, you know, arguably one of the best overall players the game has ever seen. Be that as it may, people were not necessarily tuning in for Mike in a singles division match. Let me emphasize that, because if it's Intergeekdomer teams, you know, it's absolutely, I'm tuning in for that to see Mike play. But when it comes to singles match, you know, and Mike knows, you know, where his talents lie in this division. You know, he's not blowing it out of proportion. He knows exactly, you know, where he stands. But I do not want to see Ben win. I want to see him lose. I want to see him around 8-7 in favor of Ben. It was a tight, very tight first round. A very you know, pushing the envelope here in terms of what's acceptable behavior in a match. And and maybe this is part of the quote unquote genius of his tactics, is just to wear you out, to wear you down. Because and I'm jumping way ahead now, but in the post-match interview when I said I was exhausted, I was not lying. I was so tired. I was just fatigued by the constant nature of Ben Bateman and the tactics that he, you know, deploys against his opponents, as well as just the audience in general. I was just exhausted. I could not wait for this match to end at a certain point. I was like, please, can we finish this? Because I cannot take any more of this man. Like, please, like, just shut up. Just done. Bateman has driven me to a point where, in this match specifically, I didn't even care about the result anymore. I just wanted the man to stop talking. I wanted him to leave. I just wanted it to be over. That all aside, it was still it was a great match. I mean, this was like old school as you get for Schmodown. The back and forth, Mike and Ben, they put on a hell of a show. Mike has always done that. Ben has always done that for the most part, depending on what kind of angle he's playing. But this specific angle that he's, you know, been has approached has been very, I will say, entertaining. But man, it is sometimes just draining. I'm like, again, just can this be over? Just can someone come in here and whoop on you, because I don't want to hear you talk anymore. I don't want to beat a dead horse too much on that topic. Second round though. Let's get into second round, because Bateman defers naturally to Kalinowski, and this is what I love about Mike. And we've said this before in previous weeks on the show, whether myself, Steph, or Brad. Mike is having so much fun out there. He's having a blast. He's really embracing, you know, the game this year in a way I don't think he's done in a long time. And I think that's due to the nature of the Corruption's turn and just everything that faction, him and Shannon and Marisol and everyone's been through, Chance, you know, and to an extent Adam, as well, Adam Collins. And to see Mike go, let's do this thing. Let's take the wild card. Let's see what on the first spin, and it ends up being a spinner's choice. That's just great stuff. I love seeing that, and it added so much to the match, and it added so much to the atmosphere of the match. I mean, the hooting, hollering, the cheering, the clap. I mean, just all of that. Great moment, which is one of the reasons why I love the implementation of the wild card slice this year. For moments like this, we've had other ones in previous matches this year as well, but this was great too. Because, and here's why I like Mike taking the wild card slice, because it's really, he's in a win-win situation in terms of taking the wild card slice. And here's what I mean: if he takes it, Mike, he's doing it for the love of the game. He's having a great time. He's embracing it, and we love him for that. And if he ended up getting like a really just obscure category, no one would really hold it against him. And if he went on to lose the match, you'd be like, well, he took a chance on a wild card and it didn't work out in his favor. He got hammered with a really weird category and that did him in. So there's that angle to it. Or it's this one that ultimately, he gets a great category and it makes the match way more interesting. Star Trek, it's like he gets spinners and he lands on Star Trek, or he takes Star Trek, and you're like, oh, this is great. Because we know, Mike is not on the level of a Ben Bateman in the singles division. He's not. And I'm not saying anything that nobody has ever heard before or something that Mike doesn't know. He's just not. But with the introduction of these Inner Geekdom categories that are available in the single division, it does make Mike's chances a lot greater to come out ahead of these matches. And when you get the dramatics that you're getting from Mike and Ben in the first round, and then he gets Spinner's Choice and he takes Star Trek, and you go, oh, okay. And Ben only had a 1-point lead? To me, I was like, oh, this is shaping up brilliantly. Brilliantly for Mike. But wouldn't you know it, Mike misses one question. Misses the final question in the Star Trek category. It's a 1-point steal opportunity for Ben Bateman, who is unable to capitalize on that. So, Ben, you're not that great. Sorry. If you were, you would have capitalized on that. That would have been a great moment for you. But it didn't happen. Didn't happen for you. So then Ben goes, right? He spins Jennifer Connelly, spins away. How dare you, sir? You see her in Top Gun Maverick? Love that movie. But he lands on David Fincher, and I go, ugh. David Fincher for this guy? Unreal. I mean, come on. He runs a table, 5 for 5, the full 10 points. So now he's up 18 to 15 on Micah, three point gap there. And it's, look, the match technically is still hanging in the balance. But at this point, again, I was getting exhausted. I was just like, Ben, please just shut up. Please just shut up. And honestly, right now, if you can see me on camera, like, something's in my contact right now. So that's why I'm touching my eye a lot. Audio listeners, you can't tell that. But video, obviously, you can see. I think I'm good now. And we're back. All right. So Ben, yeah, runs that table. He's got a three-point lead going to that final round. And, yeah, it's hanging in the balance. And, like, I'm like, I don't know, Mike. He can do it. He could do it. Because Ben, he might miss a two-pointer, which he's done. Lucas Black. He might miss a three-pointer. He might miss a five-pointer, right? Mike could go perfect. He could hit the two, the three, and the five. He could get comic book movies. He could get another Inner Geekdom category, you know. He could get something he's really, you know, really loves, right? And so a lot of things can happen. But, you know, they each hit their two, they each hit their three, and they each hit their five, and at the end of the day, then, was 16 out of 19 for an accuracy rate of 84%. Mike Kalinowski hit 14 out of 18 for an accuracy rate of 78%. Look, that's a very solid performance on Mike's part. Earned 83% of his points for the match. Compared to Ben, who earned 90%. Man, my eye again. Unreal. Anyways, like I said, it's been popping up here. I mean, it's not one thing, it's another. It's my contact. Earlier, my internet went out. I don't know what's going on. But I do know that this match was very entertaining. Had everything that harkens back to what the show all about, theatrics. And to top it off, crashing the interview from one Ben Bateman. And what I loved about this, it wasn't so much that Mike, you know, because Ben crashes Mike's post-match interview, it wasn't so much that Mike, you know, had to clap back at Ben. No. What ended up happening was Marisol was there. And when Ben came in there, Lady Justice was having none of it. And let me tell you, that live chat loved every bit of it. I loved every bit of it. Marisol going at Ben Bateman saying, no. I got you next. And it ain't going to be fun for you. It's over. Like, justice will be served. And I'm going to end you. Right? She said it she's much more eloquently than I have. But I love seeing that fire from Marisol. And I think the way, you know, like I said, corruption has taken on, I feel, has taken on the personality more or less of one Marisol McKee. And while, you know, they've had some tough losses, you know, Marisol losing the belt, corruption having to break up, Mike losing this match, you know, it's been tough. But they still have that fire. They still have that fire in them. And I think it's really because of Marisol. I mean, I think she means a lot to the league. I still view her as one of the faces of the league right now. I mean, to me, it's her and it's Dan Merle. I mean, right, to those are the two names I can just easily rattle off the top of my head. And there's some other names along the way that obviously I think, you know, make the cut. Mike as well, you know, what he's done across three divisions, more so in teams in Inner Geekdom, right? But those are just a few names that immediately jump to mind. I'm not making a full top five. Here are my top five, you know, faces of the league list. I'll save that for, you know, Twitter and hopefully rile up some people. I'll do that later, maybe this week. Anyways, Ben crashes this interview. Marisol, you know, now number one contender match, you're mine, you're done. So Ben's got a number one contender match against Marisol McKee. Good for Ben. Good for Ben Bateman. Good job, buddy. Wrapping up this episode, we see the chairman Harloff meet with Ben Bateman, And it's about the deal that Danger Zone had in place, that if they beat any other team, then they can get a number one contender shot. And it's being honored by the league. And Harloff goes, okay, fine. I don't, you know, we got here in a very roundabout way, be it as it may, you know, you have that shot. So I'm going to give you King Arthur. Now, last time we saw King Arthur, they lost a tough title match against Shazam at Spectacular last year. So now King Arthur is in this position, a normal contender shot against Danger Zone of Ben Bateman and Dan Merle. So now Bateman's got two number one contender matches, one against Marisol McKee. That's an extremely tough matchup. And now Danger Zone is going up against King Arthur in a normal contender match. And that's not an easy feat either. I mean, Griffey Nooms, King Khan, they work really well together. I still think, you know, they are, I mean, doesn't hold much weight just because the team's division is so thin, but King Arthur is definitely one of the better teams. I guess I'll say, in totality, they are one of the better teams we've ever had in the team's division. Where they lie, I don't know. I would have to go through, you know, the list, but they're an impressive team, and I think Danger Zone is going to get more than they bargained for with that match. Just like I think Ben Bateman is going to get more than he bargained for with Marisol. It's all likewise, you know, same thing, vice versa. And very interested in these two matchups because Ben is in a position to be double belted. He would be, what, the third, fifth player to do it, right? We had Sam, Rach, Mike, Dan, and would be Ben then. So he has an opportunity to join that club. Can he pull it off? I don't know. I mean, it would be really impressive if he beats Marisol McKee, King Arthur, Shazam, and Sam Levine, right? He has the belt right now. So to beat Sam, Marisol, Shazam, and King Arthur, if he does that, I'm going to hate watching it happen, but it'd be extraordinary if he's able to pull that off. I will hate every moment watching that, but if he pulls it off, I mean, I will reluctantly tip my hat, because that's a four-match stretch that rivals, I think, that would rival almost any four-match stretch, cross-divisional and all that. That would be very, very impressive. Can he do it? I like his chances better against King Arthur than I do Marisol McKee. Marisol McKee, I mean, she's got that fire. I mean, she has that title match format down. Like, she's very at home in that five-round format, as you saw against Griffey Nooms, as you saw against Ethan Irwin, as you saw even against Sam Levine. She didn't miss the question, right? She just got beat out in the buzz around. And Sam is a whole nother animal out there, right? And if Marisol can hang with Sam in that fashion and lose just ever so slightly, without even missing the question, mind you, I think Ben is in for a real, real tough fight against Marisol. It's going to be one of the toughest singles matches he's ever had. Obviously, his matches with Dan are very tough. This match will rival those matches, in my estimation. I do like his odds better with King Arthur, if only because he's got Dan Merle by his side. Sorry. Like, that's the way I see it. There's no doubt about it that Dan Merle is numero uno in that duo. No doubt about it. And I don't think Ben would even fight anyone against that. At least I don't think so. I mean, he's got a... Right? King Arthur, Griffey Nooms, King Khan, I think... They are so deceptively good. Their profile's still low. I think they have a low profile in the league, and that's due to the nature of the team's division and what have you. But Griffey Nooms, you know, he's, you know, scheduling wise, you know, he's probably not around as much as I think a lot of us would love to see him. So when he pops in, it is a real treat to see him pop in and hopefully score a dub over Danger Zone. Because why is anyone going to root for Danger Zone? Why is anyone going to root for Ben Bateman, right? Against Marisol McKee. I'm looking forward to these matches, these number contender matches, because I'm looking forward to Ben Bateman losing. I'm looking forward to him crashing and burning hard. I'm looking forward to him being embarrassed, losing two number contender matches. Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine, people? Let's can we just take a second to imagine what that would be like? What that's going to be like? Hold on. Yeah, I can imagine it. And it looks great to me. I can't wait. God, I hope that happens. I really do. I don't know. I think, if I'm being objective about it, I think he's going to win one of those two. Which one, I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to lean more towards him beating King Arthur because he's got Dan Morrell on the side with Danger Zone. I think he'll go 1-for-2, unfortunately. Oh, fingers crossed he goes 0-for-2 in those matches. Fingers crossed. I don't know what it is. I know Bateman's got his little stands out there. Whatever. I don't care. I want that man to crash and burn. I want him to crash and burn hard. I feel like I'm going on too long about this. I think it's revealing a little too much about how I feel about all of this. Anyways, all that aside, what a week we had in Showdown. What a weekend we had here at the Rundown trying to get this episode out. Hopefully again next week we'll have whole crew, Brad, Steph. You know, if we can, we'll bring on PLD just for good measure, just to have a kind of a reunion of sorts. And again, thanks for everyone for tuning in, listening to me ramble and rant and have delusions of grandeur of Ben Bateman losing two number contender matches. Time will tell. It's really just one last thing, and it just popped in my head. When Ben Bateman loses these number contender matches, can people just tweet at me in congratulations as if I won the match? You know, when Ben Bateman loses against Marisol or against King Arthur, just tweet at me, hey Frank, congratulations. It would be much. That's enough. On Rundown of sorts. Whole crew next week? I don't know. Tune in to find out. See ya.